We don't really know exactly what happened here. Obviously, across the country, there is infrastructure problems. I've been here for just 6-7 months, but I have already seen some of the local jurisdictions coming to us because of the lack of funding they've been seeing across the country.
To date on this special broadcast edition of the Jason Lewis Show on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK. Everybody's America's Mr. Sad today as we've witnessed this tragedy over the last 24 hours. And the great response by Minnesotans and everybody involved down there shows you how communities can come together when there is a common consensus. You don't need the federal government. You don't need anybody else. You don't even need real organization. All you need is common decency, and Minnesotans have shown that in many ways the last 24 hours. So let's get you, as I say, up to date on this. The bridge, and I want to just quickly go over a few things once again before I get to Glenn, Jesse, Kevin, and Brian and the rest of the calls here. But the bridge, everybody's making a big deal about the bridge being classified as structurally deficient. And those that would politicize this are suggesting that that's exhibit A in the fact that we need more funding, more taxes, to prevent these sorts of things. When there's no suggestion or no indication that that would have prevented anything, merely raising taxes. But nevertheless, structurally deficient, according to the Federal Highway Administration's National Bridge Inventory, merely means that the bridge is slated for future construction. It does not mean the bridge is unsafe. I mean, how cynical and how conspiratorial do you have to be to really believe that if George Bush or Tim Pawlenty, or quite frankly, any Democrat that I know of, would say, well, this bridge is unsafe, but I'm going to keep it open anyway. I'm going to just do it anyway. And yet that's the inference we're getting today from, talk show wannabes like Ed Schultz or Nick Coleman. They're actually suggesting that because some of us believe in limited government and low taxation, that somehow we're responsible for this. It's absolutely astounding when you think about it, that you would, over someone's dead body that hasn't even been retrieved from a river yet, you would be playing these political games. But I don't put anything by Mr. Coleman or the Rush wannabe Ed Schultz or anybody else. It's another case of the welfare funeral where they exploit tragedy for political gain, and it's not just stomach churning, it's nauseating. It's nauseatingly typical of the left wing in this country. The structural deficiencies found 2 years ago in the highway bridge gave it a rating of 50 on a scale of 100 or 120. I'm not certain what the scale is. Some reports say 100, some say 120. But all that means, according to National Transportation Secretary Mary Peters, is that, quote, some portions of the bridge need to be scheduled for repair or replacement. Let me be clear about this. Let me be crystal clear about this. Had Governor Pawlenty capitulated and raised the gas tax and gave the Democrats what they wanted this legislative session, none of that money would have gone to repairing this bridge. By anybody's account, the bridge wasn't slated for any repairs until probably 2020. So it is beyond despicable to suggest that somehow not raising the gas tax, not having a special session, not giving more money to mass transit is somehow responsible for this. And yet, that's precisely what we're getting from the news media and their compatriots in the Democrat Liberal Party today. Some 80 people injured, 20 to 30 people still missing, so authorities feel and fear the death toll set to go up. 4 confirmed dead now, but with 20 or 30 people missing, You heard Chief of Police Tim Dolan on this program about an hour ago say they had to leave a body in a car that they knew to be deceased simply because it was too dangerous to try to extricate them, try to extract them from the vehicle. A sight of horror that the world has now been monitoring for quite some time. Federal law requires all bridges to be inspected once a year. The I-35W bridge was scheduled for an annual inspection, and some say one was conducted, I should say, in 2006. Those reports aren't ready for public purview yet, I guess, or not readily available yet. But MnDOT didn't bring forward or request funding. The Department of Transportation in Washington didn't come forward and request funding. So I'll be blunt with you people here. If you're going to start assigning blame, whether it's Representative Jim Oberstar or any of the local yokels, you got to blame your own government. I mean, it's, and yet these are the people that think they need more money constantly. I mean, you know, again, this whole blame game is not only unsavory a day or two or three or a week after a tragedy, the night of the tragedy, the very night of the tragedy, it started. Elwin Tinklenberg was on Channel 11 last night, and he kicked things off with the blame game, suggesting that, I guess, what, we need more money?
With the constant deterioration of the budget at MnDOT and the resulting layoffs, failure to replace people, a larger and larger number of senior people who are retiring, I think that's really had a toll on the department and its ability to keep up. There are thousands of bridges that they're responsible for in the state of Minnesota, and a lot of work, and it's a tribute to their work that we've not had anything like this.
You know, the state of Minnesota, according to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, spends more per capita on roads than the national average. Maybe it's the way the money's being spent. Maybe we're not spending it doing the right things. Maybe we're diverting more of that transportation money to non-road uses. Why on earth, if we're worried about funding, would we be diverting $2 billion for light rail, soon to be 6 or 7, when we've got unsafe bridges? Ms. Klobuchar, Mr. Tinklenberg, Len Levine. Len Levine was the transportation commissioner under Rudy Perpich. He jumped on the bandwagon last night on Channel 9.
When I was there, Rudy Perpich, in our administration, we had the largest funding in transportation 2 years in a row. It was a bipartisan effort. Republicans and Democrats, the Chamber of Commerce, the unions, everybody participated in getting that funding. If we could get that kind of bipartisan effort together again and put together a program, Minnesota could be the model for the nation. I'd be happy to see that.
Here we go. Do you get the message here, folks? Are you starting to think this is all about more taxes and more funding? Amy Klobuchar, the senator who loves to criticize Bush, wasted no time with a little jab last night on Channel 9, suggesting that, gee, there are funding problems all over the country. Here's what the senator said.
We don't really know exactly what happened here. Obviously, across the country, there is infrastructure problems. I've been here for just 6-7 months, but I have already seen some of the local jurisdictions coming to us because of the lack of funding they've been seeing across the country.
And the media chiming in. Oh, before I get to the media, Harry Reid kicked things off. He's the one that really exploited a tragedy by going nuts, as he usually does, over, once again, funding or a lack of taxes killing people in Minneapolis.
All over the country, crumbling infrastructure, highways, bridges, dams, and we really need to take a hard look at that.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who never said this until a tragedy occurred. And, of course, the media chiming in this afternoon, one reporter for WDFL, where else would you expect, suggesting that this means we need to go back, have a special session, get that gas tax increase, get more money devoted to light rail, or I mean transportation, that will save lives.
Anything in this incident speak to the need for you and the legislature to get together and come to something mutually acceptable in some transportation funding package?
Remarkable stuff that's happened already, folks. This is like Cindy Sheehan on crack. This is a slight. This is shameful. This is derogatory to the rescue effort and to those people lying in that river as we speak. We spend $2.3 billion on transportation spending in Minnesota, including federal funds in fiscal year 2006. Now, only $1.2 billion of that goes to state roads. We divert general funds to light rail and non-road uses from automobile user fees. If these people are worried about funding, let's stop the Hiawatha light rail line. Let's forget about any Central Corridor light rail line and devote $1 billion overnight to fixing the bridges. If they're worried about funding in Washington, D.C., let's limit the mass transit account, which takes your gas tax money and doesn't spend it for roads, but sets it aside to fund local light rail lines. If we're worried about funding, let's get rid of welfare as we know it and start focusing on roads and bridges. They're not worried about funding. They're just using this as more of a money grab, and your bridges, if they are unsafe, will be just as unsafe as they were before, except the only difference will be you're paying the government a lot more. 17 after 5.
All over the country, crumbling infrastructure, highways, bridges, dams, and we really need to take a hard look at that.
That's 989-KTLK. Right to the phones we go with this segment of the program. First up, let's go to Kevin in St. Paul. You're on the Jason Lewis Show.
Good afternoon, Jason. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I talked to you last night, and I think it was a little early, you know, earlier than what you wanted it brought up, this whole idea that, you know, it's not a lack of money that we're not putting into our roads. It's how we're spending all this money. We're spending billions of dollars on light rail. We're spending billions of dollars to take care of citizens from other countries. And, you know, I think the thing we need to bring up in the election cycle in the next year and a half is opportunity cost.
Well, of course, opportunity cost is a fact of life when it comes to what the government spends. It's the old production possibilities curve, guns and butter, as old as the hills. The point here is that everybody that focuses on funding being a problem, and that's obviously premature. We don't know if funding was a problem at all. I doubt that it was. In fact, I know it wasn't. But to the extent it was, they all want new funding. They don't want to look at opportunity cost to rearrange funding. And we can, if you want to devote more money to roads and bridges, hell, I've been saying that for three decades. Do it. But that means you cut other parts of the government. You eliminate light rail. You eliminate baseball stadium subsidies. You eliminate health and human service budgets. You do those things and devote more money to the actual legitimate functions of government, the real infrastructure. I'm all for it. That's not what they want to do. They want to look to get more money.
Well, that's part of the problem, Jason. We have a large segment of our population that I consider to be adult children.
Yes.
They look at the toy catalog, and they want everything in it for Christmas. And if they don't get it, they throw a temper tantrum and say, we don't have enough money.
Well, Nick Coleman today literally blamed the death last night on no new taxes. I'm not making this up. He blamed the collapse of the bridge on the 6 years of a no new tax pledge by the incumbent governor. Now, I don't know anything more morally derelict, more ethically suspect than that turtlehead old man who's beyond his prime, was many years ago, suggesting that people that get tired of paying taxes out of their pocket and out of the mouths of their children are somehow now responsible for negligent homicide. I mean, how despicable and disgusting do you have to be?
Are you really surprised that it came from Nick Coleman?
No, because he's an old, tired man that is way beyond his years. I mean, he's an anachronism. But how desperate do you have to be to do that?
Well, I think in this Nick Coleman's case, he's pretty desperate. And it's, you know, it's no shot, you know, Amy Klobuchar, the same thing. You know, thank God we have a couple of rational representatives like Michelle Bachmann out there. We need more Michelle Bachmanns.
Yeah, I agree. And what we need is the ability to build these bridges and rebuild these bridges quicker and faster. Newt Gingrich was talking on the radio earlier today about some sort of incentivized private contracting Michelle Bachmann was talking about eliminating the waivers, the environmental waivers and the Davis-Bacon Act waivers, and get this thing up and running in a hurry. That ought to be our focus once we've taken care of the deceased and been compassionate therein. But no, the unions will come before the bridge building getting, or the bridge being rebuilt. Political correctness and environmentalism, you know, communism on crack, that will come before getting the bridge rebuilt. All the while, the apparatchiks like Mr. Coleman and Len Levine and Elwin Tinklenberg will be pointing their partisan fingers at anybody that they think they can get political gain from. This is what's wrong with society right now. As you say, adult children, I just say people that have an ethical lapse most every day. Thanks for the call. Glenn in Woodbury. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great.
I'd like to go back to the comment about the current construction project and those construction workers and just have the media stop trying to look for blame on them or their project. If you step back from it, that construction project may have very well saved many lives by having two lanes shut down. There would have been many more cars on the bridge.
I was talking about that to a friend of mine today. I'm glad you brought that up. Now, I don't know that there would have been many more cars if they were going, if in fact they were going 50 miles an hour. There might have been actually fewer cars on the bridge because they were stacked
up
back
there every day at that time. And right. Then listening to all the callers talk about how they would have been on the bridge, but they knew the construction project was there, and so they diverted around it because they're tired of sitting in line. So in the end, the construction project may have saved many more lives than we're trying to find right now.
Well, I mean, it is the possibility that some worker made a mistake and weakened part of the bridge or the jackhammers collectively. Usually these things happen as an accumulation of factors. You get the heat, you get the stresses, you get the jackhammers, you get all of this stuff, and one day or another, it just all becomes too much. My first suspicion, if you will, is that's what's happening, that this was just an old bridge ready to go and this was the last straw. But it could very well be that there was some mistake or some girder being accidentally weakened or something, but that doesn't mean that happened for sure either. So we ought to have an open mind.
Wait for that conclusion instead of trying to infer that up front. So
I agree.
My point is many more people would have been on that bridge.
Many more people, and had the traffic been flowing, there probably would have been even more carnage and death, because a bridge going that speed with a car going that speed with a crumbling bridge, 50 miles per hour, is going to have a much more difficult time, and the crash is going to be much more violent than a car stalled on the bridge. So that's a fair point to bring up. Thanks for the call. 29 now after 5. 26 now in front of 6 o'clock. Welcome back, everybody. 87 degrees on the day after the bridge collapse, which we are covering here on KTLK. Round-the-clock coverage on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK. I am Jason Lewis. By the way, upcoming, William Shute. Now, he's an expert on international bridge construction, on national bridge construction, too. I should say an expert and international bridge construction expert. And he will join us to give us his educated guess at this early stage on what happened yesterday over the Mississippi River. So he'll be upcoming, as will a few other reports, and your call, 651-989-5855. Chris in Maple Lake, you're on the Jason Lewis Show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I'm one of those union members that builds roads for a living, and I honestly am tired of the union leadership saying, or just ripping on this administration and saying, no matter what they do, they're going to obviously gonna rip on them, but saying that we need to spend more on highways. You know, you can't pick a direction in the metro area and not run into a construction project. And not just a construction. There's major road construction going on in their metro area. I went out of town last weekend. There's construction everywhere.
You know, I'm so glad, Chris. Kudos for you. Chris, how about this? That was such a brilliant point, such a cogent analysis, that you're going to get a KTLK T-shirt.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Brendan, when this guy hangs up, I want you to get the vitals and give this guy a T-shirt, because I'll tell you, I lived in Charlotte for 3 years, as you well know. And when I came back, I could not believe the amount, and I thought it was a good thing, and I still think it's a good thing. Governor Pawlenty borrowed millions upon millions of dollars a couple of years ago to jumpstart construction. We've got more construction going on per capita in this major metropolitan area, than I would suggest in almost any other.
But see, on a normal day, Jason, people will be complaining because there's too much road construction, there's too much traffic, they're congesting our area by doing all these projects. And granted, a lot of these projects aren't properly run. I mean, you see them put a road in, and then 2 years later, they take it back out because they didn't build it big enough.
Right.
I mean, that's not a spending issue. That's government leadership issue.
You couldn't be more right. Not only that, we have a serious problem in our trunk funding formula in the state of Minnesota. We allocate the monies from automobile user fees, vehicle excise taxes, registration tabs, and gasoline, not by lane miles traveled, but by jurisdiction. So the counties get an X percent, the cities get X percent, no matter whether they've got traffic problems or not. So you go out to rural Minnesota, and there are, quite frankly, more glorious roads than you can shake a stick at. And yet you get in the metro area and we have a road shortage capacity. So if we're really serious about this, we need to redo the highway funding formula in the state of Minnesota. Now, rural legislators will never stand for this because they look at these road projects and the outstate as an economic development tool. They don't look at it as a transportation issue.
I work with a lot of guys that are outside the metro. They commute in here because this is where all the work is. This is where all the money is. These people commute these roads that the outside areas refuse to develop. It's just like, it makes no sense.
I'm glad you called, because it's always nice when someone's in the belly of the beast to give their analysis. And I think you're right. Funding is not the problem. Frankly, the problem is not the amount of money we allocate. The problem is the money we divert for other purposes out of the transportation budgets. We just had that constitutional amendment passed last year. We're going to devote all of the vehicle excise taxes now to transportation. Only later, I tried to warn people, they didn't listen. Only later did we realize, oh gosh, only 40% of that can be used for roads, and up to 99% of it could be used for light rail.
You get a terrible irony of the law that was passed on the ballot. 3 months later, they're asking for an increase of gas tax. I thought we just...
Light rail.
You get a terrible irony of the law that was passed on the ballot. 3 months later, they're asking for an increase of gas tax. I thought we just voted on more money for highways. Now you're telling me we need more taxes for more money?
You got it, Chris. Great point. Bill Schutt is a recognized expert and international bridge engineering expert, I should say, or engineering consultant. He looks at how corrosion and other particular stresses and fatigues on bridges could possibly bring one down. He joins us now. William Schutt, thanks for your time. I know you were just on CNN and a few other places, but welcome to the Jason Lewis Show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, sir.
This is obviously far too early to start projecting causes or factors in this sort of thing. But I presume you've seen something like this in the past.
Well, we've seen something like this in the past in a great many places. In the 1970s, the federal government recognized that the corrosion issue was one of the biggest issues affecting the 500,000 bridges in the federal highway system. Of those 500,000, they said over 300,000 had a corrosion problem. And we see what happens here. We've had bridges collapse around the world, and some in the United States. We've had structures collapse and people be killed.
And what causes the corrosion?
Well, in most cases here in the United States, it's caused by the de-icing salts, the chlorides. We put them on the roads to keep it clean and melt the ice, but it enters the concrete and causes reinforcing to corrode. It corrodes or rusts, swells, and breaks the concrete. It comes down over bridge structures and causes the steel to rust or corrode away. It gets in the gaps. It affects the welds. And so that corrosion, as it goes on, goes faster and faster. So, you know, and you end up having these terrible catastrophes occur because of it.
Well, we had a caller yesterday who was familiar in this field, and he suggested, or familiar with the field of which you're speaking, and he suggested that some of the replacements for salt are no better. I think the word magnesium came to mind or something, and that those, they may cause complications.
They may also, too. Yeah, that is, I've heard that and understand that. But, you know, at this point, we have a bridge that sits out there and gets 40 years worth of salt, and it penetrates and it causes problems. I think the thing we need to look at is that we can do certain types of testing. We can see how bad the corrosion is. We can see how bad the corrosion is inside of the reinforcing steel in the concrete without breaking it apart. We can look in and see how thick the metal is at weld joints and all. We can know if there is a problem. The science is there. The instrumentation is there. Technology is there. All we have to do is do it. And then we have prevention techniques that will stop it. In 1975, systems were put on federal highway, started being put on some bridges to stop them from corroding. So we have it all there. We just have to dedicate ourselves to doing it.
And let me suggest this as well. This is not a funding problem. This is a methodology problem. Instead of doing things the old way, you could introduce new ways to do it. You could have a change in viewpoint. I personally have a problem with the federal mass transit account. I think that has taken money directly from roads and bridges and maintenance at the federal level and in many state localities. And yet, all I'm hearing today in Washington and here in the Twin Cities is, well, it's clearly due to a lack of funding. We've got to raise more revenue.
Well, you certainly need to have funding and revenue to do the things that need to be done. If we had to look at and test and fix and mitigate the, say, 300,000 bridges or 100,000 bridges, mm-hmm. that's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
However, how do you spend that money? And you got a very, very good point there. How do you direct that money? How do you do the proper and fitting testing? And then so what once you do it? Have you acted on it? Have you addressed and fixed the problem?
Trying to get... Go ahead.
You know, what happened yesterday, I'm not so sure that should have happened. We can't accept because it's old, it failed. That's nonsense.
Oh, of course. Nobody's going to accept that, I don't believe. How much of this have you seen, however, according to your theory, in northern climates vis-a-vis southern climates? I mean, I can remember the Oklahoma, I believe it was Oklahoma, it wasn't Oklahoma City, but it was in Oklahoma, a bridge collapsed a couple of years ago. We've seen bridges collapse in the south as well as the north. I mean, they're not usually salting their roads in the winter, at least not to the extent that the northern climes do.
Well, you have a number of different issues, but what happens in some of the southern climates, you do have freezing. I mean, we protected and addressed a bridge in Texas in the Panhandle. When you get to some of the coastal cities, what you have the sea salt and the salt air that blows in.
That is true.
There are a number of different contaminations that can occur to that concrete.
All right.
But yeah, salt's the big evil.
Hey, William Schutt, thanks so much. International engineering expert on bridges and corrosions. We appreciate your time today. Obviously, nobody knows what the cause of this tragedy was. We won't know that until months, literally months of investigation have taken place. And I'm not altogether certain we'll ever have a definitive answer on this sort of thing. But I do know this, that we ought to have an open mind and leave all options open, and we should not rush to judgment. And part of that rushing to judgment seems to me to be blaming someone or something or a lack of funding. How predictable is that? 651-989-5855. I'm Jason Lewis, and this is Mark in Chisago. You're on the Jason Lewis Show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for bringing talk radio back to Minnesota.
Thank you, sir. Glad to do it.
Say, something I don't hear anybody talking about yet is the salt spray mechanisms that were on the bridge deck of that bridge.
Well, we just heard from that last guest about the corrosive effects of salt. In general,
he's talking about, you know, just general spraying salt on mm-hmm. the roads. But that bridge deck had very unique sensors for temperature and moisture that automatically released some sort of a salt spray mm-hmm. onto the bridge deck.
Kind of an automatic de-icing system?
Right, yeah. And when you drove over it, you could see them right there in the lanes. And
it could be corrosion. It could be. I mean, we do live in a climate where that is, although, ironically, the opposite may be true. I wouldn't say the opposite, but we did have a relatively warm winter last year. So the need for salt, but again, to be fair, to your point, this is a cumulative effect. It's not just one winter. You're talking about this happening over the span of many seasons.
Right, and that system has been in there, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, something like that, salt and steel don't work too well together.
Well, if in fact the verdict comes in and the verdict is corrosion, or corrosive induced fatigue, then I think you've got a point. But I think we need to wait on that.
Yep.
Mark, thanks. Interesting theory. I do appreciate the call. And Egan, here's Jesse. You're on the Jason Lewis Show on KTLK.
Yeah, Jason, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of quick questions for you, well, hopefully quick. But the first one has to do with the financing we've been talking about. Obviously, this transportation money is being funneled into some of these goofy transportation projects. But I wonder, is any of this money making its way into other, say, social programs like a Medicare or whatnot, going to things that are completely non-transportation related? Do you know? Is that the case?
Come again? I didn't quite catch that.
What was that?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the gist of your question.
Okay, well, what I'm wondering is they're talking about we need more money for roads, we need to raise taxes, and I'm wondering, is any of this money making it into accounts that have nothing to do with transportation, such as social programs and whatnot?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I happen to have the MnDOT budget sitting right in front of me, and if you take a look at the, first of all, be clear about this. Out of the general fund, we are borrowing money and paying it back, the debt service, out of the general fund, the general taxes you pay into Minnesota, income, sales, and the like, to build massive public works boondoggles called light rail. Now, right. If we have enough of that money that we can steal it out of the general fund, why, we could take that money and steal it out of the general fund to rebuild bridges, couldn't we?
Well, that was my point. I mean, we've got this money that's supposed to be going for transportation, for infrastructure. Why is it not going directly to that instead of these, if it's going to other transportation issues, fine. I may think they're stupid and they're a phenomenal waste of money, but as long as it's transportation related.
Well, there's two points here. Number one, as I mentioned earlier in the program, if you take a look at Minnesota's general fund, do you know where all spending on transportation is when it comes to the hierarchy by amounts? That is, we spend far more on K through 12 education, health and human services, property tax buy downs for cities that can't control their budgets, higher education, state government affairs, debt service. All of those programs on the general fund or those categories rank higher in amounts in fiscal year 2007 than we spend on transportation.
Right. Okay. And then so things like the gas tax, which my understanding was that was supposed to go directly to transportation and not into the general fund. Is that the case?
Well, most of the gas tax does go into transportation. It is the vehicle excise tax that has been siphoned off, and it is still being siphoned off.
Okay. So that's what I mean, because everybody said it. I think we've already, it's kind of been beat to death to a point where these people are saying we need more taxes to fix these situations, when in reality, if we just use the money that we have for what it's designed, that we probably wouldn't need to raise the taxes at all.
There's two fundamental problems. One is this lie that's being perpetrated upon the populace, that we don't spend enough money on transportation in general. According to the Legislative Auditor's Report in the late 1990s, Minnesota, with 130,000 miles of roads, far from a very large state, we've only got about 5 million people here. We're one of the lower population states in the country. 130,000 miles of roads, we have the fifth largest system of roads in the nation. In 1993, we spent 52% more per capita on roads than the national average. So it might be a good idea, to your point, to ask how we're spending the money, not how much.
Right, okay. And which kind of brings me to my second point. Everybody's been talking about this bridge, this scale, which I don't totally understand, but that's fine. They say that the last inspection, it scored a 50 out of 120, correct?
Right. Structural, okay. Which classifies as structurally deficient.
Okay. So my question was, and I haven't heard anybody address it, and your last guest may have been able to, but hopefully if you've got anybody else coming up, I'd like to hear the answer is, if this bridge, if we were to go back to 1967, when this bridge was brand spanking new, hadn't been stressed, hadn't been used or exposed to any other salts or whatever, what would it have scored? Because obviously standards have increased. Would it have scored a 60 out of 120, a 70, or would it have scored a full 120 out of 120? I'd like to talk about how horrible this sounds, but at the same time, we have no perspective on what the standard was at the time that the bridge was built. So maybe, according to today's standards for new bridges with redundancies and whatnot.
Well, yeah, sure. That's like environmental regulation. I mean, you can up it each and every year. And so then you go back 50 years and there were a bunch of environmental retrogrades. Well, that they were using state-of-the-art technology at the time, and that could be part of it. The larger point to make here is structural deficiency simply means the bridge is not unsafe. We don't keep unsafe bridges open. No, there's no politician that I know of or bureaucrat, although I suppose it could happen in an Oliver Stone conspiracy movie, but there aren't too many of them that say, we know this bridge is unsafe. In fact, nobody from the federal DOT nor MnDOT ever told the governor or the administration that this bridge was unsafe.
Right.
So there was no inspection that was all of a sudden a smoking gun or a red flag that said, aha, we found it. It was merely classified, like many other bridges are, as structurally deficient. That means it's scheduled for repair within the next 15 years.
Right, and that was my understanding. And like I said, last night watching the news, one of the things that disgusted me the most, in addition to these people immediately jumping on and saying, oh, more money would have fixed it, was that we had at least one reporter, you know, saying, oh, my gosh, this is horrible. It's a 50 out of 120. That's less than 50% on the scale. And my thought was,
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. You know, if the bridge was brand spanking new and it opened in 67,
right,
what if it would have only scored a 60? That means the bridge has sustained very little.
You've got to be a dyed-in-the-wool liberal to think that, oh, I know, Bush and Pelosi got together and said, you know that I-35W bridge, it's unsafe. So let's keep it open anyway. And that, believe it or not, is the Oliver Stone, Michael Moore garbage that Nick Coleman and his band of jolly Democrats are trying to perpetrate and they're trying to propagate. And it is more than despicable. 4 minutes in front of six on KTLK. All right, we'll try to devote the next hour to more calls. We'll get Samantha, Craig, Lori, Jim, Stephen all in there. We'll try to talk to Senator Coleman as well. So hang in there, folks. Another hour coming your way as our continuing coverage of the tragedy in Minneapolis resumes on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK.